WKUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Special Counsel David Weiss intends to bring an indictment against the president's son, Hunter Biden, soon. CBS's Catherine Herridge.
The prosecutor's status report is the strongest indication that charges are looming in the Hunter Biden case. The president's son had previously reached a deal for alleged gun possession by a drug user that avoided prosecution if he abided by the terms for 2 years. But in July, a plea agreement for misdemeanor tax charges collapsed, leaving the future of the gun deal in question, and Hunter Biden facing legal jeopardy. Special Counsel David Weiss revealed his plans, telling the court the government intends to seek the return of an indictment in this case before September 29th.
It's a hot September for millions in the South and on the East Coast. In Boston,
it was hot on the bus.
WCBS-TV's Christina Fan in New York.
The only place hotter than the pavement on a sweltering summer day may be the inside of Isaac Sabea's food truck.
Better hot. It's better, better hot.
Where from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m., he's manning the grill with little relief, except for the occasional breeze.
Meteorologists say this summer shattered global heat records. Claire Nullis with the UN's World Meteorological Organization.
It was the hottest August on record by a big margin. It's the second hottest month ever.
A judge in Atlanta denies motions by two Trump co-defendants to go it alone in their election meddling racketeering cases. More from WSB's Veronica Waters.
Defense lawyers contended Powell's allegations boil down to the breach of voting machines, totally different from Chesbrough's alleged cooking up of the fake elector scheme and the rest of the indictment. But Fulton County Deputy District Attorney Will Wooten argues since this is a racketeering conspiracy,
all the evidence is admissible against all the defendants.
Prosecutors estimate such a trial would take 4 months with 150 witnesses. Chesbrough and Powell are slated to go on trial October 23rd. Veronica Waters for CBS News Atlanta.
Convicted killer Danilo Cavalcante is still on the run in southeastern Pennsylvania. He escaped from a Chester County jail last Thursday and has been spotted nearby, most recently by a Pensbury Township resident. Acting Warden Howard Holland says of the breakout,
"Well, we believe the security measures we had in place were sufficient. They've proven otherwise. And we move quickly to enhance our security measures."
Mexico's Supreme Court votes to decriminalize abortion in the predominantly Catholic country. CBS's Adrian Bard in Mexico City.
The decision means women across Mexico will have access to abortion without the fear of being arrested. It also means government hospitals cannot refuse to perform abortions. The decision was immediately hailed by Mexican groups fighting for reproductive rights.
This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. People in Waukesha can expect some temporary changes in the odor and appearance in their water next week as the city switches over to using Lake Michigan water. During the transition, there may be a brief period where the water has an unusual smell and appears reddish in color. The mayor is assuring residents that they are temporary issues. A resolution aiming to form a team of transit rangers to enhance county bus safety has received approval. Bus drivers from the Milwaukee County Transit System have been voicing their worries about safety issues and mistreatment experienced on their routes. In response to their concerns this week, the Transit Safety and Security Task Force proposed the establishment of a Transit Ranger program, comprising of 51 Transit Rangers dedicated to bus safety. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.com. joyengine.org.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
And then an unusual torrential storm turned the desert into treacherous mud, trapping tens of thousands of people amid overflowing latrines and shortages of food and water. One death at the festival is under investigation, and this latest disaster demonstrates once again that climate change intensified extreme weather events can strike everywhere at any time.
Well, they went to the desert knowing it'd be about 115 degrees, so maybe this was nice. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter at Green News Report.
Are you tired of think tank-approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. The presidential primary, always fun, always entertaining. New Hampshire, always. It's interesting to watch candidates when they actually have to talk to real people, which is why I love New Hampshire, Iowa. I love that kind of early feel because you get to see people basically tripping over themselves. You know, Vivek Ramaswamy, for instance, literally almost got crushed by his own sign. I had a big truth sign, and it just kind of fell, toppled over on top of him. That would have been fun to see. That would have been very interesting to be a part of. But you know, I've been looking at the Pence-Trump divide, and Pence, you know, gave his spiel today on, he called populism a road to ruin and went on this whole thing about, are we going to be the party of Reagan or are we going to be the party of populism, this new populism? And I couldn't help but think, and this is one of those weird kind of moments, I couldn't help to think that is this Pence trying to buy his soul back? Is this him trying to, because he had to sell it to be Trump's number two. It's an interesting spiel he did today. The entire speech was dedicated to what he called a fundamental and unbridgeable divide within the Republican Party. And you go, really? But he put it in this frame of, are we going to be good conservatives? Like Ronald Reagan would know, the old Gipper. Or are we going to be populist. And I don't see it that in those frames. I see it as, is the Republican Party going to be a functional party that actually has, a platform with ideas and vision and leadership goals and policies that they want to enact, or are they going to be the people who want to destroy stuff? And look, you've got the Trump crowd, tear things down, destroy things. That's them. No real good ideas. And the ideas that they do have are never going to happen. It's just one of these weird kind of moments. Now, Trump on the other side is saying, you know, going deeper in the populism direction. And look, I would love to have someone even stronger on trade than Biden has been. I think Biden has been okay. But Trump's saying we're doubling down, harsher trade policies. And I'm going, I'd like to see that in writing. Since all of the policies you talked about in 2015 and 2016, we then found out didn't actually exist. You know, like that healthcare plan that was going to be really, really cheap and cover everybody for everything. And it was going to be, it was utopia. We now find out they didn't actually have any real plan. It was just repeal and, well, pretend. He's also talking about more tax cuts. And this is one of those things that's real popular. You know, everyone's like, yeah, tax cuts. But here's the thing, working people, he's not talking about you. And this is, again, when will we stop being Charlie Brown? When will we realize we're never getting the tax cut football? It's never coming to us. In fact, all of the Trump tax cuts, eventually, not only do we not get them anymore, we end up having to pay them back down the road with interest. Now, our wealthy friends, those are permanent. Now, the weird thing for me is I go to this place, and we've talked about this numerous times. I think the policies that Biden has ushered through legislatively, because he understands the process and actually got stuff done, infrastructure bill, Inflation Reduction Act, the rescue plan, moving in the right direction, using the regulatory bodies to help workers organize and do some positive stuff on that front. Lots of accomplishments. You can actually fill a box with these are the accomplishments. Now, the Trump side, they had one legislative victory. One thing. Tax cuts for rich people. So when I see this poll over at the Wall Street Journal, the newspaper of the investor class, or it used to be. Used to be the newspaper of the investor class before Rupert Murdoch and the F Channel people got a hold of it. But they're touting this poll that, according to the Wall Street Journal, by an 11-point margin, more voters see Trump rather than Biden as having a record of accomplishments as president. Some 40% said Biden has such a record, while 51% said Trump had the positive accomplishments. By an 8-point margin, more voters said Trump had a vision for the future. This is one of those moments where you go, again, I named the accomplishment. The one accomplishment, tax cuts for rich people, they got it through. What other legislative victories that came out? And this is one of these moments where you go, okay, you got this poll. You've got a really respected publication, the Wall Street Journal, the newspaper of the investor class. This is the rich people's paper. There's got to be something here, right? Well, when you dig deep into this, what you find is this poll, the ultimate in push polls. In fact, the Trump folks gave $600,000 to the pollsters, from what I understand, to help kind of create, you know, this. So that they could then go and say, hey, look, Trump had better accomplishments. Knowing that facts don't matter. It's how people feel and think and believe. Not what you can prove. And I look at this and I go, you know, this is why when you look at the economic data, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the fact that unemployment's low, inflation's down, wages are going up, things are positive and happening, and jobs are being created and good jobs being created. It's one of these things that makes you go, why aren't people seeing this? And it comes back to the fact that the
the right wing controls the vast majority of the things people see, hear, and read. And they've been doing this for years. This isn't new. You know, talk radio, cable news, you know, all of these things have been put into place and built for decades to do just what they're doing. Coming up with a BS poll and then echoing and disseminating it to the masses through respectable outlets or and not so respectable ones, and giving all of the outrage merchants, you know, something to go, see, look, look. Because it's all about the money. It really is. It's all about the narrative that they keep pushing. Which is why you don't see them talking about, you never see Republicans talking about policy. They always talk about emotional things, narrative things. They always talk about tax. You know, this week, it's just amazing to me. You know, Tucker was talking about Obama's a crackhead, a gay crackhead. And you go, what? What orifice did Tucker pull this out of? Now, here's what he understands. He understands for his base, for a certain segment of our population, it's like high school all over again. That's all they want to hear, the attacks. And why I know this is BS, and I remember arguing about this years ago while Obama was in office, had a pastor come on the program years ago. James David Manning, his name was. It's an interview I will never forget. Because I had a pastor telling me all of these allegations about Obama and how, you know, Larry Sinclair and crack and, you know, all this stuff. And it's one of those things where I said, well, you know, pastor, you know those rules that you seem to want everywhere? Can you tell me what they are? Can you tell me those commandment things? Because I think you're breaking one of them. You know, I went to school, learned the Ten Commandments, one of them, bearing false witness, that's one of the ten. Now, he clearly did not and could not tell me what the ten were. He wanted to read them out of the Bible. And I said, no, I don't want you to read them. I want you to tell me. Tell me how you see them. What are they? What are these rules that you hold so sacred? And, you know, the fact that you're claiming he's a crackhead. Look, I don't know any part-time crackheads. I've known people who have been addicted to crack, and it's not something you do on the weekends. Had they come up with any other drug, I'd go, yeah, maybe. But not that one. Not that one. But here's the thing. It's not about fact. It's not about reality. It's about tainting people's minds. Oh, you know, just asking questions. For instance, you got Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly. Remember Megyn Kelly was over on Fox News. Trump attacked her, something bleeding, coming out of her eyes and stuff. And then she tried to pivot to be, you know, like an actual news person. You know, tried to get a gig over at, I think it was NBC or something. She's now lunatic fringe, right wing crazy. And now, but she's now saying, hey, look, Obama's really running the country. You know, Biden's just a puppet. You know, it's Michelle and Barack who are in the basement. And, you know, she said, you know, the reality is the reason that, you know, people really hate Michelle Obama is because she hates America. And you go, you know, explain to me why this is popping up now. It's popping up now because the economy is doing pretty good. Country's going in a positive direction. Things are getting better for people. And they can't have that. They got to keep feeding the outrage. You got to keep getting people ticked off. You throw Mike Huckabee into this mess. He just said that, you know, this could be, if Trump loses, could be the last election decided by ballots instead of bullets. And you hear this from the right all the time. And I'm going to tell you this right now. There's never going to be a bunch of militia types marching in the streets. They're cowards, the most of them. They're not going to be lining up with their ARs. They're going to talk a tough game. They're not going to do it. Because you know why? Because they're seeing what's happening to all these people who tried something on January 6th. They now know that there are consequences for stupidity. But here's the thing. What the Huckabees of the world want, what the crazy right-wingers of the world want, is that lone wolf, that one guy, that Timothy McVeigh, that extremist, that radical. That they know who they're talking to. They're not talking to the masses. They're talking to a handful, a select few. The dim. And this is what's frightening about these people, because they don't care about you or me. They don't care about the future of this country. They don't care about if we're doing well or not. They care about their bottom line, their money. It's about the money. It's all it's about. And that's what's really sick about this. They wrap themselves in the flag and pull this false patriotism stuff, all the while cashing checks and going to the bank, because that's all it's about. And the sooner we wake up to that reality, I think the better off we're going to be. So for me, this election, really important. And pointing out how well things are going, I think, is a big part of this. But also pointing out the fact that, you know, you got Trump who's promising retribution. He's promising he's going to come after anyone who disagreed with him. Me. You. Us. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Get a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Trouble Skiltskin was on the radio with Hugh Hewitt. And said he wants to debate the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle. Why would you want to debate Meghan Markle? Why? But he says here, it's because he didn't like the way she dealt with the Queen. He said he became very friendly with the Queen. The Queen hated him. But she was an incredible woman at 95. She was so sharp. She was 100%. She 100% hated him. When you watch Biden, you say this is a different planet. But they treat her with the greatest disrespect, and I didn't like it. She's dead, right? Let's go to the phones. Got Kurt on line one. Kurt, how are you, man?
Okay, thank you for taking the call, first of all. But hey, the minute Meghan Markle says, just give me the time and the place, you know Trump will take that fat body of goo and run and tuck tail at Mar-a-Lago.
I don't doubt that. I think he is a coward, and you know, it is what it is.
And the biggest thing he's afraid of more than anything else, because these are the people taking him down, are strong black women.
Yep. Well, I hope she takes him up on it. I hope it happens.
I hope so, too. And I hope she calls his bluff. But what I was calling about was you were talking about Tucker Carlson in an ex interview with that dude that said he had sex with Obama and did cocaine and stuff.
Did
you know
crack.
That's the one thing? Crack. You notice the one thing Tucker Carlson omitted from that statement?
What's that?
He said, I cannot believe this because he took a lie detector test. Well, he failed to mention that this dude failed that lie detector test because, you know, you can't let the facts get into the way of a good story.
No, it's a diversion. It's all about, you know, continually to push out all kinds of craziness to divert from reality. And look, it works. It works so well because, you know, most of the people that I know, that's been on their tongue. You know, Obama's running the country and, you know, we're having crack. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy
too.
How successful it is.
And God forbid Barack Obama didn't wear a flag lapel pin with a tan suit.
In front of a Muslim prayer rug curtain.
Oh, I forgot about the Muslim prayer rug. Oh, and he didn't wear his wedding ring certain times of the year because I believe there was a guy from Canton, Ohio at a Trump rally back in 2016 saying that Barack Obama doesn't wear his wedding ring certain times of the year because that's a Muslim practice.
Yeah, that I don't know.
Well, I don't either, but this is the kind of course, these are the same people who also said, I want to get down to the bottom of why Barack Obama wasn't in the office on September 11th, 2001. He was probably out playing golf, and I'd sure like to get to the bottom of why he wasn't on the job.
Yeah, I've heard that one too.
And, you know, it's funny because I remember my sister, she's a big Trumpy, and I don't know where my parents went wrong with her, But anyway, we were telling her about that segment. It was actually a Daily Show segment. She goes, oh, you know they have to edit that to make those people look stupid. I don't think so, because have you ever watched any of those live rallies of rally goers on, say, Right Side Broadcast Media Network or Newsmax or anything like that? These are people that genuinely believe those kind of stupid things. I don't think that's editing. I think that's the real deal.
Kurt, we got flat earthers. There are people who believe the earth is flat now.
Exactly.
So exactly. Nothing surprises me anymore. You got anything else?
No, I'll let you go to Alice online too.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
You got it.
So there you go, Alice. Kurt's brought you on. What's on your mind?
Well, all I wanted to say was, first of all, thanks, Kurt. Second of all, this right wing and the Republicans and their total denial of facts. Can you imagine them involved? You know, they're on the jury duty. So we're not going to listen to facts. We're going to go with feelings. I mean, isn't our legal system set up on facts? But obviously none of that matters. Last night, I went to a borough meeting. Our little hamlet is run by, five members, and four of them are Trump Republicans. And one of them was saying, well, I don't think anyone ought to be allowed to appeal after they've been declared guilty. And I was there, my neighbor was there, and one of our other friends was there, and he's sort of an independent. I'm liberal, and she's old conservative Republican. And we all just kind of looked at each other, shaking our heads like, okay. So, yeah, there you go. Yep. But have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. The sad reality is the crazy is taking over, because evidently on that side of the aisle, basic understanding of how things work doesn't matter. It's really just out and out a popularity contest. And, we talked about, Marjorie Three Names. And I pray that she's not as stupid as she looks. But, the proof is what it is. When you say that, during the Ice Age, she wants to know during the last Ice Age, how much did government tax people? And what did governments do to melt the ice for the next ice age? You go, where do you go with that? When someone says something like that, where do you go? When they're that detached from any bit of historical knowledge, any bit of reason, how do you participate in any way of figuring out how to rule a country and in this wonderful experiment of self-governance? Yeah, I don't know. When facts don't matter anymore, what do you get? But here's the thing. It's well worth watching. I think we need to pay more attention, especially folks who don't vote. I think we want to pull them into reality, because understand, this next election, all of the good things that have been done on the economy front will be undone by Trump. Everything that Biden has done will immediately be undone because it's red hat, blue hat. But more importantly, it's going to be and I've got friends who are, on the far fringe of saying, it'll be the last election, Trump will make himself king, all this stuff. I'm not going down that path. What he's going to do is there will be retribution. There will be, this will be the new norm. Every time there's a change of power, there will be figurative blood. There will be, prosecutions and all of this stuff, because he wants retribution. Now, here's the thing, and this is where I get these people say, well, they're going after Trump. They've weaponized. No, he broke the law in big, enormous ways. Our system is working exactly as it's supposed to. Now you go, well, we're going to impeach Biden. And I'm going, go ahead. In fact, you had John Fetterman who said, go ahead, knock yourself out. Impeach him. Go ahead. In fact, he said, and I don't know that I can say this, John Fetterman, Senator, U.S. Senator John Fetterman said, go ahead, do it. I dare you. If you can find the votes, go ahead, because you're going to lose. It's a loser. He went on to say, it would just be like a big circle jerk on the French, on the fringe right. I'm not sure that I'm allowed to say that. But a U.S. senator said it. He says, sometimes you got to call their BS. He said the actual word. And if they're going to threaten, then let's see it. And see, this is where, and I said this before. I said this when Marjorie Three Names is going, no, we want to have an inquiry. No, you don't get that. Just have an inquiry. Go do it. Introduce your articles of impeachment and impeach the guy. Go ahead. Do it. I don't know. Am I going to get in trouble for that? I mean, if you put circle in the same sentence as the jerk, we're going to find out very soon. But hey, good on Senator John Fetterman. Love that guy, especially his hoodies. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day that became known as Bloody Thursday. 7 striking workers were shot dead and another 30 wounded at the Jacola Mill in Honopath, South Carolina. The Great Textile Strike of 1934 had started on September 1st. The 22-day strike spanned the eastern United States from New England to Georgia and involved close to 500,000 workers. The main issue was the dreaded stretch-out, increased workloads at the same or even reduced pay rates. Striking textile workers implemented the flying picket squad tactic employed by Minneapolis Teamsters earlier that summer. Hundreds drove from mill to mill to prevent scabbing. Mill executives across the Piedmont were stunned and terrified at the strike's effectiveness and the workers' militancy. Strikers at the Chicola Mill had formed solid picket lines at the gate when scabs and special deputies armed by the mill owners opened fire. All 7 were shot in the back as they tried to escape the hail of bullets. According to a New York Times article the following day, the killings marked, quote, the beginning of the second bloody phase of the strike as one town after another reported completion of preparations to resist the flying squads and the picketing activity of the strikers. Frank Beecham, the grandson of Chicola Mill owner and mayor of Honopath, Dan Beecham, has worked to unearth the history of the massacre and apologize for his grandfather's cruelty. He notes that, as in many southern mill towns, after the strike went down to defeat, those who struck were fired and blacklisted. Those who retained their jobs essentially took a vow of silence, never to discuss the strike or the massacre again.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
We human beings sometimes do some terrible things in pursuit of the almighty dollar. But to our credit, one moral line we humans don't cross is to profiteer by gouging sick people on the price of medicines their lives depend on. Unless, of course, you count executives of giant pharmaceutical corporations as human beings. Gouging patients is their preferred business model. It's a scream, then, to watch Big Pharma fall into a sky-is-falling fit over our government's long-overdue move to give us patients some bargaining power over this monopolistic industry. Under President Joe Biden's anti-inflation policy passed earlier this year, our Medicare program can now negotiate drug prices on our behalf. This will drastically lower what you and I are now forced to pay to the profiteers. For decades, Congress has coddled the corporate gougers, who maintain by far the largest lobbying army in Washington, allowing them to manipulate the patent laws and rig the system. Thus, we Americans pay 2 to 3 times more than people in other countries for the exact same medicines. Oh, whale drug executives, bloated profits give us the incentive to keep developing innovative new cures. Hold it right there, slick. Most basic drug development is done by tax-funded medical researchers, not brand-name market hucksters. Mega drug outfits like Johnson & Johnson, Merck, and Bristol-Myers spend more on advertising, exorbitant executive salaries, lobbying, and big stockholder payouts than on research. Still, these same greed hounds are suing Biden, howling that making them negotiate is an unconstitutional taking of their income. But hello, these scoundrels have been taking our income, health, and lives for years. This is Jim Hightower saying, I'm with Biden on this. To stay informed and involved, connect with Public Citizen at citizen.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about, the economy, look, doing well. Unemployment, really low. Wages are ticking up. Inflation's ticking down. In fact, Bloomberg reported today that the Fed is set to double its economic growth forecast. The Fed thinks things are going well. A lot of the Wall Street folks are thinking things are going well. In fact, they've walked away from recession. But our Republican friends are doing as much as they can to ensure that, are not. And I still fear a shutdown, possibly, of the federal government here at the end of the month. But we'll see how this plays out. But here's the thing. We've been talking about the economy going in the right direction, things going well. I don't think we get enough positive news. That's why I've asked Emily G to come talk with us. Emily is the Senior Vice President of Inclusive Growth over at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, their website. Emily, great to see you again.
Rick, thank you for having me on.
So, look, all I keep hearing is bad news from the right. The economy's terrible, the inflation's horrible. All I hear is the sky is falling. Yet when I look at the numbers and when I look at the fact that, consumers are buying stuff, things, the numbers don't say as it's bad as what the messaging is. Why is that?
Sometimes it seems like people are almost cheerleading for a recession, for Biden to to say the economy is bad, but the numbers, everything about the numbers points to the contrary. We have had phenomenal job growth over the past few years. The economy has gained over 13 million jobs. Unemployment has been below 4% for a long time. And we are in the midst of a big turnaround for making more things here in America. There are investments coming not just from the government in the big three pieces of economic legislation that President Biden passed, but also from the private sector, trying to make more things here in America, opening new factories, and investing in things like semiconductors and electric vehicles, along right. with training more workers.
Now, I want to clarify something you said there, because the private sector's bringing jobs back, doing this. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it because policy is saying, hey, this is the direction that we're going as a country. You better get on board.
This is very much, both private sector action, but also something that's been spurred by the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS and Science Act, two laws that were passed by Congress and signed by the president that incentivize making more things at home. It makes a lot of sense. It gives us, less supply chain disruption in the future. Makes America more competitive, which in turn can help grow the middle class, grow our economy. And it also means that that we, we can create more jobs and not only, more jobs, but good jobs.
And better ones.
Jobs that pay, prevailing wage or even better. Jobs that can be spread all over the country.
Now, the last jobs report, I saw unemployment, ticked up a bit, but that's because not because people were getting laid off. That's because more people, I think 750,000 people came back into the workforce. So labor participation is up. If I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we're back to pre-pandemic labor participation numbers, right?
Right. So the unemployment rate measures essentially the number of people who don't have jobs but are looking for them. So one way you can get an increase in employment rate is people lose their jobs. Another reason is that people say like, hey, this is a really good market right now. It is. It remains a very hot labor market. And so when you get people enticed to come out to work because, wages are growing and there are good jobs out there, that's actually a good sign. And even though it ticked up, we are still below 4%. This is a very low unemployment rate. Even, you know, there is still a gap between white workers and black workers, but we're also seeing, in historic terms, a very low unemployment rate, even for black Americans.
Now, with the Fed saying that, you know, they're doubling their forecast, now they've done everything they could possibly do to, in my view, to try and cause more unemployment, to try and do some things that could be painful. And even through that, the economy has soldiered forward. Are you surprised by that?
So we are seeing the economy stay strong. I think a lot of people were expecting that with this kind of job growth and this kind of investment, you know, not only from that, but also from the COVID recovery bills, that you might see the economy overheating and crashing. But in fact, what we've seen is inflation cooling. We are down to about 3.2% inflation compared to about 8.5% last July. So that is getting better, and that is all the more reason for the Fed to proceed with caution as it considers rate changes.
Now, you know, in looking at this, and look, I've had conversations with a bunch of people recently about, you know, how people feel. And, you know, I look at the numbers, and you're obviously a numbers person. You know, how do we get the numbers and the way things are trending to get into people's minds that things aren't as bad as they're being sold? Because, you know, I was reading a poll. Now, granted, the poll was funded by the Trump people, but, you know, the poll still says, you know, people think, you know, Trump did more, had more policy accomplishments than Biden. I mean, messaging wise, I think we're losing a fight.
So I am optimistic that people will come around. We have done some polling ourselves. And find that, you know, it's you know, some of it isn't solidly about the numbers, the sort of big macroeconomic numbers. It is people are looking for economic security. People want to feel like the economy is growing. They want to feel like they have security for their own families. And I think overall, in macroeconomic terms, things are going well. But I think we're also, thanks to these investments in manufacturing and clean energy, we are also on the cusp of doing even better and growing the middle class more as we make more things here at home and create more jobs and grow industries in areas in which the U.S. has fallen behind, like advanced manufacturing.
And, you know, how come we don't hear more about those things? This is where I wish, you know, people would talk more about those investments that are paying off. And, you know, because I get people emailing me all the time. Well, you know, they're building this place and it's not going well. And I can't verify this. How do we get better messaging on what is actually happening and being done and the jobs that are coming out of all of this?
So some of those results are still a ways off into the future. So we're at a point where there are, you know, million or billion dollar investments being made in new semiconductor fabs and, you know, auto manufacturing plants. Those, I think in terms of economic measurement, those are most clear in construction of manufacturing plants. You know, it would be a while before those places are actually hiring people. But there are other ways in which we're seeing the economic policy choices of the Biden administration make a huge difference. One is lowering the cost of broadband. Another is lowering the cost of prescription drugs. You heard, a week ago now that the Biden administration released the list of first 10 prescription drugs that Medicare will be negotiating. It's the first time Medicare has been able to do that. That will lower out-of-pocket costs for people. That's something very tangible. Through the Inflation Reduction Act, they also lowered premiums for people who buy coverage on their own through the health insurance marketplaces to the tune of $800 per person.
You know, and, you know, one of the things that I've been talking about a lot here the last couple of days is the fact that, you know, this president, this administration, the most pro-union in my lifetime, at least. But the Treasury Department came out with a report, and I don't think that we needed the report. I'm glad they did it. But, you know, they came out and said, look, you know, we want to encourage people to join and form unions because there are all of these benefits, better wages, better hours, better conditions, all of this stuff. And couple that with what the Department of Labor and the NLRB has been doing. This seems to me to be a sea change in a way to help those jobs that are being created be even better jobs. Because as I've said 1,000 times, you know, all of those manufacturing jobs that we pine for, that we talk about all the time, we need those good paying manufacturing jobs. Those were crummy, crappy jobs before they were union jobs. That's what people want. That's what people are pining for. And I think the more that grows, the better the faster that those things happen. I hope the messaging then turns around.
And I would add to that, Rick, you're absolutely right that it's, you know, it's far better for workers, as that report talked about. But when you look at the projects themselves, too, when they're done with union labor, you know, the projects are more likely to get, studies have shown, more likely to get done on time. You're looking at better quality projects. And so, you know, there are reasons in it for those who are funding projects as well as actually working on the projects to want them to be union.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Emily G. Emily is the Senior Vice President of Inclusive Growth at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they do. Now, some of the other stuff that the administration's been talking about, and I want to get some of your thoughts on this. You know, this assault on junk fees and going after these companies, going after utility bills and stuff like this. I think this is really important. I think it's a winner because I do think average everyday working people can see the benefit and will see once this stuff gets moving and in the right direction, will see the benefit into in their pocketbooks and at the kitchen table. And I think this is a winner. I'm curious your thoughts.
So if you hear the president talk about the economy, there are a few different things he's trying to do. One is investments, which we've been talking about a lot over the past 10 minutes or so. You know, a lot of it's empower workers, which I know you and I both feel very strongly about. But another is lowering costs and promoting competition. And I think that is one where the difference is, you know, very tangible for families. It's not paying junk fees. It's having less medical debt and making sure that if a hospital offers financial assistance, that you're aware of that, you aren't kept in the dark. It's, you know, making sure that consumers aren't, you know, ripped off by banks and financial institutions. And then it's also holding big pharma accountable for giving people fair prices and Medicare fair prices for life-saving prescription drugs.
Yeah, but here's the thing that where my mind goes, Emily. You know, all this stuff should be nonpartisan. You know, my Republican friends say they believe in competition. You know, especially when you're talking about education. Maybe not the economy, but you know, they believe in competition when it suits them. This seems like something that should be nonpartisan, something that, you know, both parties should get behind. I don't understand why it's that difficult.
I think it's so polarized that they can't admit, you know, even things that if you remember back to the 2020 campaign, Trump said, or, you know, after the 2016 campaign, Trump said that he was going to get Medicare to negotiate drugs. And he didn't deliver,
right.
But Joe Biden delivered. You know, this is that there's nothing partisan about that.
Shock.
About, yeah, enabling the government to get better prices, you know, save taxpayers money and save Medicare money. That shouldn't be political, but sadly it is. And you've already seen Republicans try to repeal parts of the Inflation Reduction Act, which included those drug reforms, clean energy. And they're also trying to cut funding for the IRS when we know that additional funding for compliance will help lower, you know, will help raise revenue for the government on that.
So how do we get that message? How do we frame that? Because, you know, everyone hates the IRS. You know, everyone hates paying taxes. Now, look, I think it's the price of admission to be a citizen in this country. I mean, if you want roads and bridges and police departments and, you know, all the socialist stuff that we have, you got to pay for it. It's got to come from somewhere. So it's the price of admission. But, you know, you get a lot of people. We've been trained like Pavlovian dogs. You hear the IRS and people start to foam at the mouth.
So if you look closely at what is, you know, this is actually going to, some of it is to people like you and me who maybe say be owed a refund or need to refile some paperwork. I had to, you know, it could be months or years before you heard back from the IRS, and they've turned, you know, dramatically brought down the times in which they're able to respond to people. So, you know, it's a customer service function. We should be able to call and get answers. We need to know about what's happening to our money. On a household level. And it's also, if you look at who is not paying taxes and sort of not playing fair and playing by the rules, it's usually the top earners. And so IRS enforcement is going to help make sure that the wealthy and corporations pay their fair share.
No, I'm with you on this. Last line of questioning I've got for you. If you're making the elevator pitch on how well the economy is, what is that pitch? Because, you know, I get people go to ask me all the time, you know, okay, you say it's the economy's doing well. Give me the pitch. So give me a pitch. Why is the economy doing well?
The economy is doing well because of investments that we've made in workers and investments that we're making in the American people to grow the middle class. And when the middle class grows, the economy grows as well.
There you go. Emily, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much. It's always great seeing you.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Emily G, she is the vice president of, senior vice president of inclusive growth there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at that. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
Open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1860. That was the day that Jane Addams was born in Cedarville, Illinois. Her family was wealthy, and her father served as a state senator. In 1881, Jane Addams visited London with her friend Ellen Gates Starr. There, the two women were inspired by Toynbee Hall, a settlement house which worked with the poor and working class in the city. They decided to establish a similar effort in Chicago. They founded Hull House in an immigrant neighborhood of Italian, Greek, and Jewish workers. Hull House grew to become a complex of facilities that offered kindergarten, daycare, lectures, and cultural programs, and an important space for women trade unionists to hold meetings. The women of Hull House became one of the leading proponents for workplace safety in the nation, pushing for laws and reforms to help workers. During the 1894 Pullman worker strike, Jane Addams visited the community and had meals with the women workers. She was able to convince the workers' strike committee to agree to sit down to arbitration, but the Pullman Company officials staunchly refused to negotiate. The refusal of the company to bargain and the rising anger of the workers was an eye-opener for Jane. Later, she reflected, quote, "During all those dark days of the Pullman strike, the growth of class bitterness was most obvious." Before the strike, she wrote, quote, "There had been nothing in my experience that had revealed that distinct cleavage of society which a general strike at least momentarily affords." In 1931, Jane Addams was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for her lifelong advocacy for working class women and children and her strong stand for peace during World War I. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So the Mexican Supreme Court decriminalized abortion nationwide today, 2 years after ruling that abortion was not a crime in one northern state. It's now nation across the entire country, and my mind, and this is I guess maybe this is just, you know, me being me, but my mind went to this place going, this is the new tourist attraction. Hey American women, do you need reproductive care? Come to Mexico and spend your tourism dollars here, again, because we've got medical tourism already. People are already going to Mexico to get health care. People are going to India to get health care. So maybe this is the next jump. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Steve on line one. Steve, how are you?
Hello?
Steve, how are you? What's on your mind?
Oh, yes, I wanted to make a couple of points. And I think your guest hit it right on the nose with regard to who's not paying their taxes in this country. And it amazes me. I mean, we've got a group of people who are part of this uber wealthy. I'm not talking about the 1%. To be in the 1%, for people who don't know, it's about $750,000 a year. I'm not saying that's a small amount of money, but we're not talking about private jets and homes in three different countries on that kind of money. I'm talking about the uber wealthy, people with hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. And when it comes to these individuals, I mean, the tax code is already rigged in their favor. But nonetheless, you know, it just goes to show you what the mindset of what greed can do to some people. Because beyond the fact that it's already rigged for you, you still have to find a way to cheat so you can keep even more of that money.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I think a lot of these people have short memories, you know, or never took a history class. I mean, since the late 19th century, three times in this country's history, the left has capitalism from people who wanted to burn it down. These are people who wanted to show up with the pitchforks and the torches, you know, on the front lawns of the people who had everything. And it's only because we managed to renegotiate the social structure and economic structure in this country that said that, you know what, you still get to be rich, not quite as much, because you got to pay some more in taxes, and other people get to share in some of the wealth that they actually helped to create in this society. And guess what? We don't burn down your house and take everything.
Yeah.
And that, again, that happened several times in the 20th century, in the late 19th century. But, you know, you can push people only so far, and then it's going to happen again. And I just don't know that these people understand that. You know, sooner or later, somebody's going to wake up and say, you know, okay, you could support a family in 1969 working in a steel mill here in Chicago, and you could buy a house and go on vacation and send your kids to school. And this is one person working. Fast forward 20 years, and all of a sudden there are two people in the home working, and we're comparing incomes from those two different periods as if there's still just one person. No, this is the annual household income. And now we've actually managed to squeeze kids in there who are no longer working like when I was younger. I was like, okay, I wanted to buy my first car. Okay, you're going to have to make a contribution, according to my dad. We're talking about kids who are working to buy themselves a pair of shoes to start out the school year, to buy a jacket that they need in order to keep from freezing. So, I mean, we've run out of essentially other members of the household to throw into the workforce. So at some point, something's going to give in this country. People, you just can't use up people. Chicago is a great city, but people don't always know that a lot of the things that you look across the skyline and see were built on the backs of people whose lives were used up. Long before we had labor laws and long before we had protections, you went to work when you were 12, 13, 14 years old, and you might have died at that workplace 40 years later. And you worked 12 hours a day, and you worked 5, 6, maybe 7 days a week. And that's what built cities like Chicago and New York and a lot of other places. But again, it's the wasted lives. These people never took a vacation, never had a decent meal or medical care. You just lived and you died in misery. And is that what we really want, or do we want to fight for something better?
Yeah, but I don't think we're having that conversation yet. I think we're still hung up on all of the things that, and the wealth class has done a masterful job of funding people to keep throwing red meat at us, the outrage candy to keep us focused on other stuff. I mean, you go back to Thomas Frank's What's the Matter with Kansas? You know, his argument was they were voting on their other interests, which is the culture war, which is all of the, you know, the divisive stuff. The economy came second for a lot of people, and I'm waiting for that, like you said, people to finally wake up to the reality that they've been robbed blind. That one income used to support a family really
absolutely. They're taking prayer out of schools, and they want a 3-day waiting period before I can buy a gun, and gay people and people of color might be just like everybody else. Those are the things that matter to me, not whether or not I'm going to have enough money to pay for my medication, my food, and my rent when I'm 65. You know, I mean, again, you're right, they did a masterful job of diverting attention from average people to issues which in no way, shape, or form are going to manifestly affect their lives on a daily basis, and away from those things that really do.
Yeah, I'm still shaking my head today over the Tucker Carlson, you know, reviving the Obama, you know, crackhead gay story. It's just incredible to me that we keep falling for it over and over and over again. And I know the quote attributed to Jay Gould, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. They're not even paying anymore. We're just doing it to ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, whatever existed that worked for them at one time, they'll bring it back. And, of course, you know, they've managed to convince a lot of Americans that you don't need higher education. In fact, it's nothing but a place where you're sort of socialized to be, you know, a part of some giant conspiracy to overthrow the United States by a bunch of leftists. And instead, you know, you can become a billionaire, the Mark Zuckerbergs and Musks and Bezos of the world. You know, that can just be anybody. You know, you don't need any kind of education. You don't need any kind of training. You can just miraculously become a billionaire because you're just so hardworking, because that's all you need in the world, just to be hardworking and committed, and the American dream can be yours, which is utterly ridiculous, as if our great-grandparents didn't work hard, as I alluded alluded to earlier when they were working 12 and 15 hours a day. Yeah, they were working hard. Nobody was paying them, and your only choice was to go down the street and get another job that was just as bad as the one you had, because there was no such thing as unions, no such thing as power, and when people did try to organize, they were murdered in the streets, literally. There's a reason why so many things in this country are named after...
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.